Hello, it's Garth with ReachMahjong.com's podcast, weekly podcast, and our other host,
Jen Barr,
and our producer, Troy Presley. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Yes, you can welcome too.
Yeah, I can do it twice.
Yes, twice in a row. Let's see, how have we been doing this week? Did you do anything fun this week?
Fun.
Yeah,
I've almost forgotten what that is.
Yeah, it's been one thing of preparation after another for you, huh?
Yeah, lots and lots of work.
Working hard. I got to play a lot of Mahjong, actually. I had three sessions at Santenbo this week, plus we had a really cool practice session yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
For the World Series of Mahjong. You, me, and Ito Yuko.
It was really fun. It was another part of the preparations, but it was fun as well.
Well, it's sort of, you know, it's a different kind of preparation.
Yeah, yep. We played with a comedian that's going to be at the World Series of Mahjong in Macau next month.
Yes. He is also, are we not supposed to say his name?
I don't know. I think it's okay. They're doing it for a TV show.
Right, yes, exactly.
So, I don't think anyone would know his name even if we said it, so we might as well just call him Mr. K.
Mr. K. I mean, I just find it really interesting that he is also a Kojima, and yet the kanji for his name, the Chinese characters for his name, look nothing like any Kojima I've ever seen ever in history.
Yeah, but you also thought that Shianagi was West Egg.
That was quite a boondoggle,
it
yes.
It is possible that you saw it and you just thought it was something else.
That's true, huh?
You probably thought it was like
it looks like ball. It looks like looking at something. See like Chicken
see.
Island or something.
Like maybe duck.
Mountain Chicken Island,
yeah,
or something.
It looks kind of like duck a little bit.
Oh, yes. But it was fun to play the World Series of Mahjong rules again for the first time in quite a long time.
Right.
And play a little bit like I used to just play Japanese Mahjong, too, which was like, you know, kind of just going for it all the time, which is something I really have not been doing lately. My game has been so much more about defense, which is really funny because despite the fact that's what I'm doing all the time, I'm just not good at defense. It's just not something I do well, you know, and then to be trying to play defense well all the time and just basically killing my game is killing my whole game. So it's fun to play with the World Series rules and just go for it. Although you were the big winner at the practice session, were you not?
Yeah, I didn't really win at all while we were warming up, and then when we got to the real game,
you had a couple
I cleaned up
big hands.
Yeah,
you had, all right. So no, you had one really big hand.
I had a couple
minorly big hands.
I had two. I had the three colored runs, which is really big, and I also had a full straight.
Oh, yes, a full straight and a half flush, perhaps, at the same time?
Yep.
I'm pretty sure that was like at least a 145-point hand or 100.
Yeah, it was something like that. 135, maybe?
Yeah, 135. It couldn't be 145, because then that's not a multiple of three.
Yeah, way to go.
Yes, that would be strange if somehow a World Series of Mahjong hand ended up being a non-multiple of three.
Hey, your paper is loud.
Oh, sorry. That's me putting weird sounds into the thang. Other stuff that is going on in the world. Other stuff that is going on in the world. Our producer Troy is thinking about making a company, so we want names.
Is that going to be edited out? Is that okay?
Okay. Oh. Anyway.
Honestly speaking, the company should be up and running by the time this is listened to.
Yes. Well, anyway, we're all thinking of names, so if anybody has a cool suggestion, we are open for those sort of suggestions.
Yeah. I might make a company eventually, too.
Yes. Yeah. We're all going to start companies just so that we can name them. That's the whole reason to have a company.
Yeah. Tell us your names.
Yes. Tell
if
us
you
a
don't
name.
Have kids, you should just make a company and name that instead.
Yes, it's like having a it's like having your own little kid. let's see what happened in the world in the rest of the world of Mahjong. News from the Mahjong world. The Korean Mahjong League, we've spoken a little bit about this before, but they've started accepting subscriptions, I guess, to their tournament. On October 3rd, the Korean Mahjong League has a Korean Championship tournament. This was announced by President Jaewon Yoo. I hope I got his name nearly pronounced right. the tournament will, of course, take place in Seoul. And one of the things that I thought was funny about this was they advertised the tournament as being cool because Seoul was chosen by the New York Times as the third most visitable place this year.
Wow.
In 2010. You should go to Seoul third after going to Sri Lanka and Patagonia.
Where's Patagonia?
Chile?
Chile. I love the confidence in your voice. Yeah.
Chile or Peru or one of those
South American.
Yes, yeah, South American left coast countries, I think. yes. Seoul is third on the list as the most visitable destination.
Wow.
This year. So that would be really cool to go to, except that it's on October 3rd, which is going to be our first session of league play, unless I see some miracle in 2 weeks and manage to move up to C2 in special league.
Don't do that.
So it's going to be a little bit difficult for any of the Renmei players to make it to that tournament.
JPML players.
JPML players, our pro league. But, I don't know, if some of the players do finish up on Saturday and can make it over on Sunday for the tournament, that would be really cool to participate in. They do have the information on their website in English, Japanese and Korean, so they are obviously expecting, or at least trying to invite, a rather international crowd.
What are the rules?
They're the Reach Mahjong rules.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I really wish we could go.
It would be really, really cool to be able to play.
Maybe I'll get sick and I won't be able to go to the Pro League, and the only medicine that will save me will be in Seoul.
Yes, Korean Japanese Mahjong. One of the other interesting requirements one of the other interesting points in their little release about the tournament was one of the requirement for people to play in this tournament is being a person who is able to play offline Mahjong without any problem.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and I thought that was interesting given the discussion that we had last week, which got a lot more discussion on Mahjong news this week, too.
Oh, wow.
There's been a lot more discussion on Ian Fraser's article talking about the rules and the way that they were enforced at the recent European championships. And I know we did talk about it in depth a bit last week, but I felt like after I had listened to it, that there were a couple points that I didn't feel like we made quite as clearly as I wanted to.
Right.
First of all, I thought it was really funny that he would suggest that we shouldn't have rules because then jerks like that guy in example one use them to their advantage. And I think it's a really funny idea to think that we should not have rules so guys like that cannot take advantage of them. Because are you really trying to imagine that somebody who is willing to take advantage of rules in that situation will not take advantage of the fact that you don't have rules in other situations?
I think you read that wrong.
I
think he's saying you shouldn't have a specific rules that allow people to take advantage of. Like, a rule that favors the player that's trying to take advantage of other players.
Right, but I mean, you know, I think he's suggesting the fact that we have that we have a lot of rules.
No. I don't think that's what he's saying.
Really?
I think he's saying that specific rule favors players that are trying to, like, have bad manners and or angle shoot, basically.
Uh-huh.
And so the rules should be changed so that players cannot take advantage of that kind of situation.
Well, it seems... how could he have been taking advantage of the situation when he didn't really gain any advantage?
Maybe if you read that comment again, then maybe I'd know better what you're talking about, too, and I wouldn't be making things up to try and prove you wrong.
Speaking out of your unknowledgeable... Yes, right. Try to keep the language to the
family. Well, it's not very clear what you're talking about, and some people might not have listened last week, so maybe you should explain what you're talking about.
Right. There was this article that was complaining about the way the rules were enforced at the recent European Championships, and there was he cited a couple examples.
Right. So the one that he's talking about, the first example you're talking about, is which one?
It's the one I'm just bringing it up. Number one, at the start of a hand, player one notices that player two, who is scoring, has not collected his 13th tile. He says nothing about this at the time, the person that notices this says nothing about this at the time, but two turns later pounces to claim a chombo immediately after that player claims, player two claims a tile for chi, quite openly stating that he had noticed the infringement from the outset of the hand.
So I think what the guy is saying, when he's saying we shouldn't have rules that allow this player to take advantage of that situation, he's saying the rules should be altered.
Mm.
He's not saying we shouldn't have any rules at all. He's saying the rules should be altered so that that kind of player can't take advantage of that situation.
Let's see. His comment after he makes the examples. For my money, example one is just plain unpleasant, and I simply don't buy any notion of hiding behind the tournament referee's instruction not to comment, even though we all fully understand the rationale for the basic proposition. It's like he's saying the referee said not to comment, even though the guy eventually did comment by saying, "Oh, you don't have enough tiles." I think we said this, that should not have been a chombo,
right?
Because that's not only is that over penalizing the player for a thing that doesn't actually totally really ruin the rest of the game for other players, but it might actually be more of a punishment for some of the players currently playing right then, who might have a good hand and actually want to play out that hand.
Right.
One of the other things that I think we did not quite mention is that in a tournament like this, a chombo should not, while being a penalty for the player that commits the foul, it should not also be a benefit for the other players in the hand.
Mm.
And I think that's I didn't realize that until I reread the article the way they said it. Chombos are often paid out in cash games here in Japan. The other players received that penalty instead of it just coming off of the fouling player's
right.
score.
And in tournaments, that never happens here.
Right, that absolutely never happens here. And that's a huge disadvantage for all the other players who happen to be at a table where a foul does not occur.
And it's also a huge incentive for people at the same table to be really strict about chombo rules.
Yes, exactly. Right, so that's, if there's one rule that really needs to be changed, I think a lot of the thinking about chombo needs to be changed. First of all, which fouls qualify as an actual chombo, and then the way the chombo penalty is executed
right.
need to be rethought.
Right, so here, when you have a chombo, usually they take a certain amount of points off of your total score individually.
Right.
They do not award those points to any other players.
And those points come off your score at the end of the game.
Right. It has nothing to do with the game. It's your total points for the tournament. It has
right.
nothing to do with that game or your placement in that game.
Right. So it won't affect... So you'll still score the game as you normally would have, and then after you... You know, if you take first, you'll still get your full first place bonus for taking first in the game, but
right.
then you'll get like a minus 10 or minus 20 points taken off of that final score after all the other stuff has been computed.
Right.
But I think there's some strange ideas about the way the idea of making rules in a tournament like this, and I think it comes from people who probably don't have a lot of tournament playing experience.
Right.
And you know, in any game like this, you have to have rules to make sure that the game proceeds in an orderly and fair way for all players involved. I was going to use the example of string bets in poker. You know, is it really that big a deal to, you know, put out some chips and then say, oh, wait, I want to bet some more chips, and then, oh, wait, I don't want to bet some more. Wait, I'm going to take some of these chips back. You know, really, you know, that's an innocent mistake. Maybe somebody thought they were putting out some amount and then they wanted to take that back. Well, no, that's not allowable because it really affects the way other players are thinking about the game.
Right.
And it changes what other players think about what you're thinking, too. And it really screws things up for those players. And that's why that is a rule that... there's a rule that says you can't change your bet once you've put it out there, even though, you know, some players new to the game might say, well, come on, you know, how come you're being really strict there? And so the same thing goes for mistaken pons or mistaken rons or mistaken cheese. Let's say, for example, you have a full flush and you're not entirely sure whether which tiles are your weight. So every time somebody throws out a tile in that suit, you say, oh, ron, wait, pon, and then you look through your hand to make sure that this is a tile that you want or not. I mean, that's going to screw up the game for everybody. It totally breaks up the game.
Right.
And so that is exactly the kind of situation where you need to have rules that prevent players from calling pon or ron or chi indiscriminately every turn, because it really screws up the way the other players are thinking about the game. So I think we need to, people need to think about the fact that the rules are not there to punish people for not knowing the rules. The rules are there to make sure that the game moves and proceeds in an orderly way and fairly for all players involved. When people think about the rules and how to change them for the next tournament, that's one of the things they should keep in mind and how they want to actually improve the way the rules are enforced.
Right.
Okay, one other thing that I thought was really funny in the news. They have found that people sitting around for long periods of time develop blood clots while playing Mahjong, which I guess is very similar to the way that people develop blood clots sitting in, especially in the economy section, in airplanes for long periods of time. And I have to say...
Economy class syndrome?
Yes, the economy class syndrome. I have to say, lately I have taken that to heart. And have really tried to remember to stand up pretty much at the end of every single game, just to stretch my legs a little bit. And I think it does help you clear your mind a little bit, too. When you know, if you just keep sitting in the same position for like 3-4 hours at a time, you just stop. You just get more and more into a brain dead mindset.
When I'm playing Fight Club, sometimes I'll stand up for almost a whole game, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just get tired of sitting, and my legs need to stretch.
Yeah, you need to stretch. Your body needs to, even though you're using mostly your mind, your body is still there, and it needs to, you need to get the blood flowing everywhere. So remember to stand up sometimes. Get your blood flowing. All right, random strategy talk. For this week, I saw a really interesting hand while I was playing at Sentenbo last week. Sometime in the last week, a player had just thrown a 3,900 point hand to the guy that was now dealer. He's sitting in the west seat, and he's got 21,000 points. About 21,000 points, and in his hand he has the 3-3 in bamboos. Excuse me. He has the 3-3-4-5-5-6-7 of bamboos, 6-7 of dots, 7-8 of characters, and a pair of green dragons. So he's got three pairs in his hand at the moment, and he's got two possibilities. Two runs already in his hand, and if he gets the 5 or 8 of dots or the 6 or 9 of characters, then he will have a ready hand and he can reach. I'm sorry, the Dora in this situation I think was the white dragon, so he doesn't have any of them in his hand. But one of the interesting things about this hand is the fact that when he has the extra 3 in the bamboos means that he can also turn that into his head if he draws another 3 or 6. Which he did. He drew another 6, so he dropped the green dragon, which I thought was, that's clearly the right thing to do. Here's where he did something.
So he drew the 6. He has in bamboos. He has 3-3-4-5-5-6-6-7. In dots, he has 6-7. In cracks, he has 7-8, and he has 1 green dragon left.
Exactly. Okay. Now he draws the 8 of cracks. So he has a pair of 8 of cracks in his hand. And so now he has a couple different spots where he can be going for a pair, or going for a triple if he gets another one to go with that with one of those pairs, and he drops the green dragon. And this is what would you do there? Would you drop the green dragon, or would you drop the thing you just drew, the 8 of cracks?
I think, of course, you would drop the green dragon now.
Really? So this is something that I think is... It just goes to show how too much I'm playing defense lately. And also, I'm playing too much to...
How many discards is this into the hand?
This is... I think, about the 10th or 11th discard.
Okay, so it's a little bit late.
It's getting a little bit late. Yeah, it's just after, say, the middle of the middle point of the drawing round.
Well, was there a reason for you to think that the Eight of Cracks was going to be dangerous, or
not dangerous? But the thing is, I'm really hoping is to aim for a hand that is, reach, simples and peace, and then if I keep the eight in my hand and then throw it out later. Maybe even the tile that I throw out for my hand being ready, it really draws attention to the fact that I might be waiting for something in that area. And it's true, there were no eights of cracks on the table, and there were no threes of bamboos on the table either. So it's quite possible that you would draw one of those four tiles to make his hand ready instead of being a peace hand. And I think that just goes to show one of the problems I have with my game right now is playing too much towards a final shape that I've already imagined my hand to be heading for, even though I could change and adapt to a different shape. And maybe also thinking a little bit too much about defense, like, oh, I don't want to have this tile because it might be, somebody might want this. It might be useful for somebody else.
Yeah, I think if you're going to keep the green dragon there the second time, then I don't know. I don't understand, like, because you have this green dragon, you're just keeping it to be a safe tile, but
right.
You don't really know what your hand's going to become, and you have to remember that your hand is priority.
Right.
So once you discard that eight instead of the green dragon, you're halfway thinking of folding this hand, even, I would think.
That's an interesting way of thinking, yeah.
You're not going for it anymore.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you discard the eight of cracks there, then you're making your hand more difficult to get ready.
Well, you still have 7-8 of cracks in your hand.
I understand that, but you're making it so you can't use that 3 when it comes. You can't use the 8 of cracks if that comes again.
Uh-huh.
Also, there's other ways that your hand could change where you might want that 8 of cracks to be the pair.
Exactly. Let's go on then. The next thing he drew was the 4 of bamboos. And again, he played this differently from what I would have. He threw the 7 of cracks, so that now he had the 3-3-4-4-5-5, 6-6-7 of bamboos. So he's got pairs of the bamboos from the 3 to the 6, and then 1-7.
And if he gets a 4-7, that's going to be another run for him.
Exactly, right. And he also has the 6 and 7 of dots still. And now he just has a pair of 8s of cracks in the cracks.
So if you had that hand, you would have discarded the 7 of bams?
What was I thinking there?
Or the 8 of cracks again?
I think I probably would have discarded the 8 of cracks again, because then I'm expecting to just throw the 7 of bamboos, because that I have my head and I have I have a double run already guaranteed there with the 3-3-4-4-5-5-6-6.
I think 7 of cracks would have been or 7 of bams would be a better choice than 8 of cracks. I like 7 of cracks as well.
7 of cracks. All right.
I mean, I know that you're thinking of, okay, for my final way, which is the trickiest, but I think you're thinking too much about it.
Right, yeah. And again, that does kill the possibility of... it doesn't kill
it. Well, because if you discard the 7 of bams instead of the 8 of cracks, you can still use the 3 of bams and the 6 of bams.
Right.
And the 8 of cracks. When you're discarding the 8 of cracks, then you pretty much can only use the 5 and 8 of dots or the 6 and 9 of cracks. There's not really anything else there that helps you.
Uh-huh.
So you're making your hand really, really slim.
That is amazing. I used to be so much better at at choosing the option that would give me the most possibilities for improving my hand.
Right.
And lately, that's just not what I'm doing.
It's kind of hard to visualize, but what we have here is 2 threes, 2 fours, 2 fives, 2 sixes, and 1 7 of bamboos, 6 7 of dots, 7 8 8 of cracks. Right?
Right. And from this 14-tile situation, that guy threw the 7.
Right,
which now that you point out, it seems like the right answer.
That's the That gives you the most options. And, I mean, 7 of Bams is also not bad. 8 of Cracks would probably be my third choice of discarding. Uh-huh. Because if you throw the 7 of Bams, you can make a triple with your 3 of Bams or a triple with your 6 of Bams. Or you can make a... Because you'll still have the
right,
double run
right,
there.
Right.
Or you can make a triple with your 8 of Cracks. Or you can make a run with the 5, 6, 7 of Dots. 6, 7, 8 of Dots. Mm. Or 6
there
or 9 of Cracks.
There are a lot of possibilities there.
And the discarding the 8 of Cracks really... I mean, it makes it so your 7 of Bams is useless.
Right.
Because you don't have a pair, so you have to use all your Bams there for your pair.
Right.
And... Yep.
Okay, and then the last really interesting thing that he drew was another 7 of Bamboos. So now he has the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pair, all pairs in the Bamboos. And he has a pair of 8s in the Cracks. He has a 7 pairs hand. And he drops the 6 of Dots. And then the interesting thing happens. he's got that pair of 8s. He had the 6, 7 of Dots, so now he's waiting for the 7 of Dots. He's got a simple and 7 pairs hand. So that's 3 hand points. If he manages to draw it, he'll get 1,600, 3,200. 1,600 from the 2 non-dealers and 3,200 from the dealer. That's 6,400 points. Then the dealer throws out the 8 of Cracks. What do you do in that situation? Do you pull?
Just depends. I think it really depends on the situation.
So, yeah, it does depend on the situation a little bit. In this situation, it's the second hand of the game. He's just thrown a 3,900-point hand. And, you know, if he pulls the 8 of Cracks, then he has the 3, 3, 4, 4, 5, 5, 6, 6, 7, 7. That means he's waiting for the 3, 4, 6, or 7, right?
Right.
That certainly improves the heck out of his weight. That gives him 8 tiles now that he's waiting for, and of 4 different types.
Right.
Whereas before he was waiting just for the 7 of Dots, and there are only 3 of those left.
Yeah, but it also puts him back down to 1,000 points.
Exactly. So in this situation, what do you think? Is this a good shobu? Is this a place to take a stand?
Like I don't that? Know. I don't like the fact that he already discarded 2 green dragons, and it makes me not want to push the hand too far. So it makes me not want to pull in the 8 of Cracks. I just want to kind of...
Yeah, I think that... So, for me, that was the most awful example of shobu ever in history, I think. again, there are certainly situations where you could argue for that being a good move. Like, for example, the last hand of the game. You're in a winning position. You just need to win that hand to win the game. Obviously, it's more to your advantage to choose a weight that is more likely to come out.
Right.
And so I could see somebody arguing. In fact, that may just be the right move if you're in that situation where you're going to win the game if you win that hand. This is still towards the beginning of the game. He's already lost some points. It would be helpful for him to get some more points back.
Easy to change your weight from the... From the 7 of Dots, if that's the part of the hand you don't like.
Exactly.
And any Bamboos is going to change your weight.
Right, and any of the Bamboos is also going to be a better weight just because you have the beginnings of a wall forming there. So if you get the 2 or 8 of Bamboos, that's really going to improve your hand. Or, like you say, any of the other Bamboos you can also make runs with, too.
Any Bamboos from 2 to 8 is going to improve your weight and give you a bigger hand.
Right.
You'll have
peace and
simples.
And simples
and probably a double run somewhere in there.
Right. So I think this was an example of a terrible choice there. It could even possibly turn into 2 double runs
right.
if you got the 2 or 8.
Right.
We've talked a little bit about this before, the idea of shobu or where to take a stand. And I really want to cite this as an example of a place where you if this is the kind of stand you're taking, you really want to rethink your thinking about taking stands. Because
so where did you see this hand again?
I saw this at Sentempo. I was sitting behind the desk and watching a table play. I wasn't playing at the
time. This was just a customer?
This was just a customer, yes.
Okay.
And an example of why, or and you know, evidence of why this was not the right thing to do. Eventually, by the end of the game, he was behind on the last hand of the game. He was behind the first place player by 4,400 points. That was the same guy that he did actually win that hand, the hand before that we were talking about, when the dealer at the time
for 1,000 points
threw 1,000 points to him.
Yeah. Also, if the Eight of Cracks was a Dora or something,
that would be different. Or if any of those tiles were Dora, it would definitely make a little bit of a difference as to whether you might play it that way. As it was, he got 1,000 points for that hand, and then at the end of the game, he was down 4,400 points. Had, you know, and who's to say, if he had played it differently, would he have been able to win the hand as you know, a simple and seven pairs hand, and maybe draw the tile himself, that would have been 6,400 points. That player that he was losing to by 4,400 points was the dealer at the time there. If he had won that point, that would have been a 9,600 point swing from that player. Mm-hmm. And he would have been winning against, you know, all other things being exactly the same for that game, he would have been in the lead at that point. Mm. And it just goes to show that I think that he really misplayed that hand, and it screwed him for the entire game.
Mm.
He ended up taking second place, and he had a much better chance of taking first place if he had taken a better stand at that point.
So when you brought this hand up to talk about today, did you think that I was going to agree with you with your where you would have thrown the Eight of Cracks instead of the Green Dragon?
No, I was pretty sure you weren't going to. I wanted to first cite that as an example. I was going to be pretty surprised if you did that, and I was going to think, wow, you're way more defensive than I would have thought. That's something that I looked at after I did that, and I really had to say, wow, that's a mistake. I should not be playing like that. That is a bad kind of shobu for me to be making. It's a bad place for me to be making that kind of stand. And like you point out, I'm ruining my own hand by doing that. I was also expecting you to agree with me about pawning the pawn. Certainly there are situations where you could argue for that being the correct thing, but in that situation, it's towards the beginning of the game. He's really taking down the value of the hand, and you know, he has a chance there to get a bunch of points. Sure, it's a little bit less likely that he's going to be able to get those points, but that's the reward. That's the risk and reward that you get from you know, taking that risk. You get a little bit more points, but it's harder to get.
Right.
So that was what I wanted to talk about today was Shobu, and think about the places where you're taking your stand, and is that paying off in the long run? If you play like that all the time, are you going to win more or are you going to lose more? And I think that is an example. If you think about it, that guy is going to lose more playing that way than he's going to win.
Right.
Certainly there will be times when that ends up being the successful way to play, but probably in the long run that is losing Mahjong. All right. Oh, allow me to whap my papers around noisily a little more. Let's start wrapping it up.
Okay, good. Yep, I gotta catch a train tonight.
Okay, yes. What is going on this week? We have a lot of interesting stuff. Yes, don't we?
The official Tokyo qualifier for the World Series of Mahjong is on Saturday. If you are interested in playing, email me tonight. Actually, this probably won't go up until it's already started. So, the ReachMahjong.com Cup is on Sunday. It's the last one before the World Series of Mahjong. And so it's your last chance to win a seat into the Reach event.
Cool events going on this weekend. Yep. Also, something not having anything to do with us is the Saikyoisen Pro Qualifier, which is a big interruption for us. But
there's a lot of people that will be playing in that. Oh.
Yes, that's is that supposedly the biggest tournament in Japan?
Yep. That's
when you figure in all you figure in all the qualifiers they have. I guess you could say that more people participate at some point in that tournament at some point than in any other tournament in Japan.
Probably, yeah.
It's pretty big, all right. So it'll be interesting to see who qualifies for the next rounds out of the Saikyoisen. As always, if you'd like to get in touch with us, I am Garth, E-G-A-R-T-H-E, at reachmahjong.com, and your address is?
Jen, J-E-N-N, at reachmahjong.com. You can catch this podcast on iTunes or the website, reachmahjong.com.
Absolutely. And as always, we love to hear from you. Tell us some of your Mahjong stories, or just what you'd like to hear. That about wraps it up. So give us a heads up, and thanks for listening.
See ya. 언제 리치 니 밭으로 아가레바 기분과 모사이쿠 마슈와 카나리 사비레타 자수 마장 화이트 클라브 번지 럭 아 오니산 마타 소레 론야와 고메야데 아야이 Monty.